friends. It's the moment you've been waiting for every week, roughly around this time. A podcast nugget drops your way. You open up iTunes, you get the little alert that pops up that says Sam Nation is prepared for download. Look, and you're the lucky one, by the way. You're getting the podcast. Your friends might not be, so spread the word. Let them know that this is happening. And it needs to be a part of their lives the same way it is in yours. Now, okay, before I get to all of this stuff going on this week, let me tell you, I had a great experience. Wednesday night, I took my daughter and two of her friends to the Angels game. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, for those of you not in the know about where the team's located. Believe it or not, the stadium actually is in Orange County. Not too far from where I live, so I do go to games periodically. I have season tickets, and I took the girls, 7 and 8 year old girls, if you can imagine this. Of all the people I take to baseball games with me, and I enjoy baseball, and I like going to the live games, and so, but of all my guests over the years, these girls were the best. I mean, it was fantastic, and they get on the smile cam, and they're having the time of their lives. But I am, can I just tell you, I am amazed at how much food and sugar can be consumed by these little creatures. I'll just tell you this. There's no way that I sitting next to them could have eaten what they ate. These girls had hot dogs. Then they had French fries. Then they had chicken nuggets. Then they ate, they ordered all this dessert, right? They had cotton candy. What else? Ice cream sandwich. And then they ordered these, like some sugary little Sour Patches things and ate those too. It kind of reminded me of a last meal of a convicted prisoner. But it was crazy. But anyway, best part of my week and loved every second of it. Who did not necessarily have a great week in my view? Well, is Mueller. And let me explain this. Bob Mueller, you've got to understand something about this investigation. Mueller must, at the end of the day, have something beyond a few affiliates of Trump to show for this enormous expenditure of time and money. Mueller has something like 30 plus attorneys on staff. These are folks. These are not cheap people. They have investigators. There is a real cost associated with this investigation. And at the end of the day, it has to go to the president. If it doesn't, it's a big nothing. And it ends up for a guy like Mueller, this is his last stand, right? He's a guy who was retired. And now has entered back into public life. But this was his last hurrah. He does not want to have the final footnote in his so-called illustrious career to be this nonsense. Well, what? I mean, if his only scalp is Paul Manafort, or the highest ranking scalp is a guy who ran Trump's campaign for, 2 minutes. This is not what it's going after. So you must understand the level of motivation. If it's not political, right? Because a lot of people here on the right are saying, look, this is Mueller is a political ideologue. And I give you that. But it's bigger than just a political hatred of Trump. There is career motivation behind getting the president. And it is against this backdrop that you have to analyze everything that is going on. This is the broader context for all of these happenings. So on a week where we are led to believe that the biggest and worstest thing ever to happen in the history of President Trump. And what I'm referring to here, friends, is this tape that dropped by CNN. Yeah, well, CNN didn't leak it necessarily. The person that leaked it is Trump's ex-lawyer, Michael Cohen. This D-bag. So he leaks the tape through his lawyer, who is Lonnie Davis. You guys remember who Lonnie Davis is, right? Lonnie Davis is Bill Clinton's Cohen. He's the guy who represented Bill Clinton during his impeachment. He represented Clinton during all his various campaign finance violations. He was one of Clinton's many fixers. So there is no accident that Cohen now has retained Lonnie Davis, who is a known Democratic Party operative. This tape is leaked by Cohen through his lawyer, Lonnie Davis. And it's leaked to, obviously, a friendly source, CNN News. I don't know why I added the news part on there. I guess just for the absurdity of it. The number one issue about this leaked recording, and we will play it here and I'll go over it and explain what's important and what's not important, but the number one thing here with this leaked recording is that it contains a privileged conversation between a client and his attorney. The client is President Trump, or then candidate Trump. And the attorney is Michael Cohen. Now, as a lawyer, let me explain to you why this is the key critical issue. When I represent somebody, and it, by the way, doesn't have to even be a formal representation. If, for example, you and I know each other, if Dr. Audio, who is sitting at the board today, or producer Robbie, who is manning the flight deck here at Sam Nation, if either one of them after the show today comes up to me and says, hey, Sam, I know this might not be your practice area, but, you know, I've got this problem. I've got a lemon law issue, or I've got, you know, my girlfriend stole our cat or whatever it is. We don't have to sign a contract. They don't have to pay me money. There is an implied attorney-client relationship formed. And it's subjective, right? It's not an objective standard. It's a subjective standard held by the client. It's the person that you are talking to. If you're the lawyer, do they believe that you are giving them legal advice? Do they believe that in some form an attorney-client relationship has been formed? So I hear a lot of pontificating right now about, well, this Cohen guy, he was his lawyer, but he wasn't really, and he was on the payroll, but more as a business consultant. No, he is giving Trump legal advice. He's performing legal work for Trump. What is on the paperwork, what kind of money he was paid and how he was paid, even if he wasn't paid at all. There is an attorney-client relationship, and every bar in the state, every state bar, and the ABA rules very specific about maintaining client secrecy, okay? You tell me something, if like the example I gave you a second ago, producer Robbie, Dr. Audio, after the show, ask me a question about something. I can't go and talk about it on air without their permission. I can't talk about it with anybody without their permission. Now, most jurisdictions, for example, here in California, you can't even record somebody without their permission. But the idea of releasing a privileged conversation, an attorney releasing a privileged conversation and turning it over to the media to humiliate and embarrass his client. Because, by the way, friends, I don't want to give anything away here, but that's all this is going to be. There is no smoking gun criminal problem here on this tape for Trump. It is embarrassing because he's talking about paying off a gal with whom he had an affair. No guy wants to be in that scenario or that circumstance. Now, least of all, not a public figure. But this is the number one issue. This is something that if I did this as an attorney and publicly humiliated a client, I would probably get disbarred. The state bar takes this kind of thing extremely seriously. They do in California. I cannot imagine that they don't take it seriously in New York. So now why is Bob Mueller having a bad week because of this? Because if this guy is Bob's Mueller's star witness, if this is as good as Bob Mueller has, Bob Mueller is screwed. And he's screwed, my friends, because he's got an absolute fink of a rat of a dishonest, crap human being and unprofessional attorney who has just impeached himself in a very, very major way. No one is talking about this. This is the everybody saying, oh, we got this tape and it's bad for Trump. Okay, let's play the tape. Producer Robbie, let's start with the first half. I'm splitting it into two halves. The first half, they're talking about the election, but I don't want to leave anything out. So listen closely to this.
Great poll, by the way. Seen it. Great poll.
Making progress.
Big time.
And you guys are good guys.
Hello, Pastor Scott.
I believe it. No, Pastor Scott. What's that?
Oh, no.
Can we use him anymore?
Oh, yeah. 100. No, you're talking about Mark Burns. We felt him.
Well, I don't mean that. Mark Burns. Can we use him?
No. No.
Richard Lefrak just called. He just had me have a chance. He had an idea for you.
Great. So we got served from the New York Times. I told you this. We were regarding to unseal the divorce papers with Ivana. We're fighting it. Kasowitz is going to...
never be able to get that.
Never. Never. Kasowitz doesn't... They'll ever be able... They don't have a...
Give me a job, please.
They don't have a legitimate purpose.
And you have a woman that doesn't want to lose you.
Correct.
So you've been handling.
Yes, and it's all...
It's been going on for a while.
For about 2-3 weeks now.
All you have to do is delay it for...
Even after that, it's not going to ever be opened. There's no purpose for it. Told you about Charleston.
Okay, so we're going to pause right there. Let me just go through this. It's obviously Trump, right? There's nobody disputing the authenticity of this tape. He's talking to Cohen. We don't know what Cohen sounds like, but you know what Trump sounds like, so you figure out who's who. First, they're talking about a poll. This is during the election. Great poll. Trump's numbers were on the rise, even in the polling that was completely fixed and wrong. But at any rate, making great progress, good guy. And then they talk about a couple of black pastors, these guys, Pastor Scott and Mark Burns. Now, they've gotten some criticism, incidentally, about how cavalierly they're talking about these black pastors and how they're going to use them, right, that they're good for the campaign. And who does Trump think he's? By the way, can you imagine tuning in for a second, if you had a secret recording of Bill Clinton talking to his aides, to talking to Carville, whatever, you know, can you imagine James Carville talking about how they're going to use Maya Angelou? I mean, this is absurd, but the funniest part about this is, as there's a debate about which guy they want to use, and Trump says, no, we want to use Mark Burns, and criticism comes out right away, Mark Burns, the pastor himself, goes on Twitter and begins bragging about how important he was to the Trump campaign. And he said, I've been saying for almost 2 years, this tape, fact remains that I remained traveling with and speaking for the campaign as even more proof that I remained firmly in Donald Trump's corner. It's great. And so he's a Make America Great Again guy. It's funny. I love when the media wants to be outraged on behalf of other people who themselves have zero outrage, quite the opposite. Just a small side note. So then the conversation moves to talking about the New York Times. Now, this was right around the time when the Times went after Trump's divorce proceedings with his first wife, Ivana. And Trump, for obvious reasons, didn't want that out. So they go to discuss it. They're talking about Mark Kasowitz, who's Trump's actually much better lawyer. Actually went to a real law school and pretty solid guy. And they're talking about how they're going to fight that. Then Trump asks for a Coke. I'm explaining to you how this is a real smoking gun here. Okay, continuing. Then they said, you know, they're more about that. Then they talk about Charleston, which is a reference, I believe, a reference to this payoff for this one Playboy model. McDougal is her name. And that takes us to the next part of the tape that begins like this.
I need to open up a company for the transfer of all of that info regarding our friend David, you know, so that I'm going to do that right away. I've actually come up and I've spoken to Alan Weisselberg about how to set the whole thing up with funding. Yes. And it's all the stuff, because, you know, you never know where that company,
you never know where he's going to be.
Correct. So I'm all over that. And I spoke to Alan about it when it comes time for the financing, which will be...
Listen, what financing?
We'll have to pay you. So
I'll pay the kid.
No. I got... No.
All right. Now, I want to give you, and we're going to be up against a break here, so I don't want to leave this mid thought, but I want to go through it very carefully. Important for you to know who the players are. So David Pecker, he says, our friend David Pecker, maybe you've heard of him. He's the guy who owns the National Enquirer. And Trump has a history of using him to buy the story of someone who has an unflattering experience with Trump, buy a story and buy the exclusive rights to that story. So you're technically not paying the woman, usually the woman, to not talk. You're actually paying her for the exclusive rights to the story, and then you bury the story. Does that make sense? Okay, so when we come back, hang tight, because this is where the meat is. This is where the supposed smoking gun is. And I have some thoughts on this that I don't think you want to miss. Don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Here in the hot seat behind the microphone that makes this all happen, powered by coffee and good looks. Well, at least looks made for radio. So here we go, going through the recording that Cohen, Michael Cohen, Trump's crap stooge lawyer, released to CNN through his Clinton lawyer, Lonnie Davis. I played it right before the break. I'm not going to replay it again. I'll go through it carefully. So he's opens with Cohen saying he needs to open up a company for the transfer of all that info regarding our friend. And that is referring to David Pecker, the owner of the National Enquirer. I explained just a minute ago about how that works. Is National Enquirer. David Pecker had a longstanding history with Trump. If there is a woman out there, a bimbo eruption, if you will, to borrow a term from Hillary Clinton, they would pay her for the exclusive rights of the story and they would bury the story. Now, she couldn't legally go out and tell her story to anybody else because the National Enquirer owned the rights to that story exclusively. Make sense? All right. Now, the next reference is to a guy, Alan Weisselberg. Now, he's the CFO or some kind of finance guy in the Trump organization. And then it moves to how they pay for it. And Trump, well, Cohen says, I got to talk to the CFO guy. I got to talk to Alan about it. Quote, when it comes time for the financing, which will be, and Trump cuts him off and says, what financing? And Cohen says, well, we'll have to pay him something. And Trump goes, pay with cash. And Cohen goes, no, 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 no. I got it. Trump goes, check. And then it cuts off. Now, the fact that it cuts off is an unnatural end to the conversation because presumably there's a lot more going on. To me, that stinks, right? I mean, to me, there's more in that conversation that isn't being shared, and why? I want to know. But I also, let me explain to you something. Now I'm going to take my lawyer hat off, and I'm going to put on my businessman hat. My businessman perspective, working in the world with other business people, this whole idea that the press is reporting that Trump wanted to pay him in cash is absurd because this is not how he meant it. The lawyer, Cohen, says to him, when it comes time for financing. Now, for a guy like Trump who's in real estate, financing means you go to a bank and they loan you money, or you go to a line of credit or a hedge fund or somebody like that and they loan you money. That's what he thinks financing means. Now, to a lawyer, we think financing means how you pay for it, how you finance it. It's a shortcut word. But for a guy like Trump, financing and cash mean two different things. Financing means you get a loan, and cash means you pay with it in cash. But he doesn't mean he's going to drop off a bunch of unmarked 10s and 20s in a duffel bag. He means he's going to write a check, which is why he corrects it and says, I mean a check. This is an example where you're going to hear what you want to hear. And if you think I'm doing that, fine, have at it. But I will stand by this, that this is how this was, this is how it was meant. This is a shorthand conversation. You go, okay, have you ever bought a car? Okay. All right. Well, if they ask you and they say, sir, are you going to finance it or are you going to pay in cash? Do you think that the dealership means you're going to show up and with a money gun and start raining singles on them? Do you think you're going to? No. Do you think you're going to bring stacks of hundreds of dollars? Or are you going to write a check? So this is how people speak. And a lot has been made about this cash thing. So what do we have here? What do we have? If everything is true in this audio tape, I have no reason to believe that it's not. You've got a guy, Trump, who screwed around as a married man with a Playboy model. He's embarrassed by it. He doesn't want it getting out during the election. He doesn't want it getting out to his wife. Pays her off. The question becomes, is it legal in terms of campaign finance? If he's using his own money and he has an excuse that it's not for the campaign, but because he really wants to stay married and doesn't want his wife finding out about it, it's going to be really freaking difficult for Bob Mueller to make a charge stick on this. Where it gets dicey is when you do things like, use your campaign donation, right, to finance a payoff like that. John Edwards, exactly. That's what he did. You get in trouble for that. And by the way, did he get convicted? No, he did not, because those charges are very difficult to get to stick. All right. Now you know a little bit more, right? It's a little better context. That's what this program is about. We're going to do a quick legal segment, and then we're going to talk more a little bit about this and some other things that have happened this week. I definitely want to explain. Again, I'm going to return a little bit here to the lawyer angle and give you some examples about that. Don't go anywhere. Quick break, and we'll be back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Majowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Gentlemen and ladies, Sam Rajofsky here. I have a segment, our legal segment here, perhaps a little more adult than we normally address here on the program. So if this is your trigger warning, if there are children in the car. Now, I'm gonna address this very sensitively, and I will use an abundance of euphemistic language, which I, as your host, have ever ready at the tip of my tongue. All right, you've been warned. Everybody good? Here we go. In Scotland, and no comments about Scotland here. It's just perchance that this occurred at this part of the world. There's a man who went on trial, was convicted for tricking women into believing that he, in fact, had a member, when the truth was he did not. Now, we don't have any details here about what happened to him to get into that circumstance where he was left without his manhood. But at any rate, he tricked two women into believing he had one when he didn't. And he went to jail. Now, it's funny because I posted about this on Twitter, and then I had a few people reach out to me and say to me, well, wait a minute. Hold the phone. I read the article. I understand that he used some foreign object, quote unquote, in order to make the women believe that there was intercourse. And I get all that, but didn't these women consent to sex? Do they have some bizarre laws in Scotland that make this a problem? And I said, no, hold on. This is a great legal segment. because, and by the way, I know there are a lot of young people that listen to this program. If you're a young person, you're in college right now, you're having the time of your life, you might be a, maybe you were Amish growing up, but now you're letting loose. Let me tell you, be forewarned, okay? Consent in California is very specific and limited, and you cannot do anything by trickery or by fraud or by deceit. Now, I know what you men are thinking. You're thinking, well, this is how we get women. I mean, this is how we, you know, we, okay, it's not just puffery. What you can't do is do what this guy did. You can't have the woman believe that she's going to have the real thing. And then, you know, put a foreign object in her. You can't do that. It's a problem. It's a legal problem. And so this guy, I feel terrible for him. But not only, one, does he not have that thing that you need down there, but two, we all now know that he does not have that thing that he needs down there because it's front page news all over the world. And three, he got, you know, put on a sex offender registry list, which I think is what I would call insult to injury. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
I'll tell you, there are a number of bozos on all sides in this Cohen story. Michael Cohen, the attorney who leaked the private conversation he was having with Trump during the campaign related to the payoff of a Playboy model with whom Trump purportedly had an affair. The other guy here who is dancing on a dangerous line and is going to end up getting screwed is Michael Avenatti. Now, Avenatti, he's a lawyer out here in California, and he's the guy who's representing Stormy Daniels. He's most famous for that. But Avenatti, he lives here in Newport Beach, practically my neighbor. I don't know him. I've never met him. We run in some of the same circles, and he's highly litigious, so I'm going to be careful about what I say here. But let me just put it to you this way. Whenever you get too obsessed with talking to the media, you begin to get into hot water. Okay, and I know this from, there are lawyers out there who, as a rule, do not talk to the media at all. And then there are lawyers who spend their entire careers talking to the media. And I think we've got a young lady and her daughter in Los Angeles who have made a career of it, to name a couple. Now, I think what happens is, and what is happening, you remember that dinner a couple weeks ago where Avenatti, this media was talking about it, Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' lawyer, the guy who's going to take down Trump, runs into Michael Cohen. The two Michaels, they meet, and they're both having dinner at a swanky establishment in Midtown Manhattan. And they end up talking. And all eyes are on this conversation. Everybody is riveted because they're talking. These are their nemeses meet. And Avenatti leaves the conversation and says it was productive and interesting. Also calls it random. Okay, don't know what that means. But he's a California guy, so we say random out here. It's like, it was random. The problem is, they both have clients. Cohen's client is Trump. Well, you're saying, oh, he's not. Well, you know what? Just because he's no longer Trump's lawyer doesn't mean that he doesn't have a duty of confidentiality to the information that he learned while he was Trump's lawyer. And the State Bar in California, and I assume the State Bar in New York, because they follow roughly the same rules that are put out there by the ABA, there are only very limited circumstances when you can break client confidentiality. And by the way, generally speaking, a criminal investigation by someone like Bob Mueller isn't one of them. Did you know that? So, for example, if I represent you and you were doing something shady and I was giving you legal advice during that process, you told me, you can tell me as your lawyer, I did it. I killed the hoe, right? You can say that. I buried her out in the desert. I think we're going to have to bleep that. Anyway, so you can tell me that, but I can't tell somebody about it years later. And in fact, even after in California, I have to maintain that confidence even after you pass away. My client's death does not somehow alleviate or lift my duty to protect confidences. That is how serious the rule is. If there's any rule of thumb for a lawyer, you yourself, if you've got a secret, a client told you to carry it to the grave. So these guys are blabbling to each other and they're being public about it and they're flaunting it. And it's such bad news because they're lost, in my view, they're lost in an echo chamber of fancy journalists, of big-time political operatives all telling them, you're the hero, you're the hero, you're the guy that's going to take down Trump, do it, do it, do it. And they're getting egged on by all these people that obviously have an agenda, but who have not taken the oaths that these guys have as attorneys. And who don't have duties to their respective clients that they're breaching. This is a problem. Oh, and by the way, you saw that Stormy Daniels' divorce proceedings. Her husband wants nothing else to do with this. And I'm not saying there's any shenanigans going on, but husband wants out. And I think, I don't know, I think this is all getting really tired. It's just coming up with nothing. And most importantly here, it's the people that are bringing these complaints out and these smoking guns. These are the people who are going to end up paying a price big time. All right. Well, I'll get to the feminist wedding. I'm going to get to the feminist wedding tips. This is big news. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky back after this.
And gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rojofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation. Okay. Are you a feminist? I remember back in the 90s, we talked a lot about male feminism. I was coming of age as a youth, middle school and high school in the 90s, and entered adulthood, actually, in the late 90s. So for me, the 90s were a big deal. And this whole idea of male feminism, though, was something that sort of escaped me. I didn't get it. And I'm not saying that I was just, I, from my own experiences in high school with young women that I dated or that I was friends with, I never experienced somebody who was mad at me for opening up a door for them. My high school girlfriend was very traditional I just thought it was this myth out there. Turns out it isn't. Feminism still burning the flame out there. Hope that we're all going to be absolutely equal and that men will slam the door in women's faces at will. A friend of the program sent us this article from a website called everydayfeminism.com. Admittedly, I do not peruse this site, but thankfully she did and was able to alert me to this article. How can a wedding be feminist? Here are six ideas. By the way, here's a way a wedding can be feminist. Don't get married. I mean, in true feminism, want to be independent and equal, and you don't need anyone else, let alone a man. An idea I always thought feminism was, you don't get married and you get six cats. But okay. Talk about the planning. That's one of the first tips, the planning. Don't indulge. They finally pinned me down. Malarkey. The idea that one person does all the planning, you shouldn't do that, right? And that, I think what they mean is that the women shouldn't be doing all the planning. The man should be doing the planning with the woman. Ladies, what do you think about this? You think you should have your fiancés help you with the planning of the wedding? Now, producer Aubrey, I know him. If he were getting hitched, he would probably want to do the cooking. That's for sure. He'd be catering his own wedding. This guy can sous vide like nobody else. So he would be, you know, that probably you'd be doing that. By the way, you know what else? The ring. They want to do away with the ring because it implies ownership, right? The girl gets engaged and the guy puts the ring on and it's like, that cow was mine. I don't know. That's like branding, right? That's what I meant. Yes, yeah. I'm not calling her a cow. I'm not calling your fiance as a cow. Okay. Well, oh, so this is great. I want to line up the women that are going to give up the diamond ring. I want to see these women. Bring me the women that don't want to get the shiny ring. This is right. Every woman's a feminist until you do dangle a diamond in front of her. And then it's like, oh, I love you. I love you. I'm going to get in so much hot water from the show. The dress. Yeah, she should wear pants. By the way, true story, my mother, to her wedding, wore a pantsuit. And she looked great. So, you know, all of you out there that think that I'm some chauvinist, you know, I have strong women in my life, okay? And I got some pictures to prove it. Oh, don't, your dad walking you down the aisle? Don't you dare do that, girl, because that is, it's basically like, you know, I'm going to hand you over and then he's going to give you five goats or I don't know, something like that. It's very transactional. And it shouldn't be about that. It should be about, I don't know, you guys just coming together and that kind of thing. Here's the deal. The left, liberals, all these people, they want to crap on tradition. They want to crap on everything that we enjoy. They want to turn this world into this politically correct, soulless, bland, gray panorama of blah. It's true. That's how it works. Okay. When we come back, things are looking up in the economy. Boom, shaka, wow, wow. Trump is on a roll. And it's just one more piece of evidence that the blue wave that's coming may or may not be a total myth. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rajofsky back after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Yo, yo, here we go. Sam Rajofsky, Sam Nation, behind the Sam Nation microphone. And yes, we're safely behind the orange curtain here in the Sam Nation studios. Dr. Audio at the controls, producer Robbie sipping coffee and providing much needed moral support. If you've seen the economic news, we are at 4.1% GDP growth, and that is stunning, folks. For those of you who don't realize, these are numbers never seen during the Obama years. And it's going up. That's the thing. It's not even what the number is today. It's the trend. It's just up, up, and away. And I think this is important context politically because, all right. I get it. Trump paid off a bimbo, and there's other women, supposedly. And, oh, yes, he met with some Russian people in Trump Tower and wanted to get dirt on Hillary. Okay, all of that is going on. And in the world of the media, that is all very, very, very important. it's so important that they lead with these big stories about it. And CNN has these MSNBC big visuals. And every time you turn on one of those channels, that's all there is on the Chiron, which is that strip below the screen. Trump, Russia, Cohen, secret tapes, collusion. We got it. Meanwhile, things are happening. The economy is moving. It's moving, folks. It's moving for a reason. It's moving because objectively, Trump has made substantive changes to the way we treat business in this country. Substantively, there are regulations that have been cut. Substantively, there have been taxes lowered. Substantively, we have a climate where business is getting better or has more opportunities to grow. Now, that's all objective, right? That's kind of numbers and data-driven. But there's another component to this that is really missed by all the people that are writing Trump off as a buffoon, and that is that with a business guy in charge, albeit rash and saying nasty things on Twitter and the like, people are reacting to it positively. It is inspiring because people see somebody in the White House who they believe instinctively, right? I'm talking about small business owners. I'm talking about people who are maybe started a business. There's a large number of rise. The numbers show this. A large number of rise of small businesses getting off the ground. These are job creators, right? Every guy that starts a business hires one or two people. You do that times thousands and thousands of people, it makes a difference. And these people are doing it not just because objectively there are changes being made, but subjectively, you finally have a guy in the White House that, well, it doesn't matter what he does, but at least he's not talking like a socialist. We had 8 years of Obama who at least rhetorically, was a socialist. Obama looked me as a small business owner in the eyes and told me I didn't build it. He told me that really, actually, Sam, never mind that you and your wife and your partner and everybody scrimped and saved and made it work and had lean months and had times when you couldn't pay your mortgage and, forget all of that. You couldn't have done it if it wasn't for the state of California and the United States of America. When I heard that, as a business owner, my stomach turned. And it didn't turn because I was insulted. I don't give a rat's rear end what Obama thinks. I think he's a loser. So I don't care. But what my stomach turned is I think this is a guy who thinks that. And everything that he is doing and will be doing is going to be based on that prejudice. Where the state is more important than me. No. You and I, this is the dirty secret. You and I are more important than the state. You and I make the state. You and I make America what it is. You and I are literally right now making America great again. This difference, this change, this epochal shift in rhetoric is creating change. And it's real. And these numbers are going to continue to go up. The political answer to this by the Democrats is to tack left. And it's astounding to me. I saw this week, respected political scientist Larry Sabato. You know this guy. He's always on the cable networks. He's got the mustache, gray guy, very scholarly fellow. And he's saying, well, really right now it tilts the midterms, right? They tilt toward a Democratic win, a takeover of the House. And the reason this is really important, in case you didn't realize it, is if the Democrats take the House, presumably articles of impeachment will be filed against Trump, and now everything's going to get bogged down even further. Doubt Trump would ever get impeached. I'm just saying it, we're watching this. It's important to both sides of the conversation. And so you got this respected guy who comes out and the cable news goes crazy. Oh, it looks like the Democrats are going to do great. It looks like Democrats are going to do great. Meanwhile, I am sitting here and I understand sometimes I keenly want to go right when everybody goes left. And I don't mean that politically, but I want to go one direction when everybody else, when the herd is going the other. But I always have to check myself and confirm that my gut instinct about something is correct. But I wonder here. I really do. As I spun this in my mind, I wonder that against a backdrop of incredible opportunity, economic growth, improving financial circumstances for most Americans, including big, huge gains in minority groups, read traditional voters of the Democratic Party, with those type of gains, how much do people really care about upsetting the apple cart, dumping Trump or punishing Trump, right, or electing Democrats, when these Democrats, instead of being middle-of-the-road, reasonable candidates who just want to provide a check and balance to Trump's crazy, are actually moving the totally opposite direction and are more socialistic than Obama ever was. I think socialism sells. I think the idea of being taken care of and having the state give you free stuff and the state, you know, taking away some freedoms, but in turn giving you comfort and stability, I think that sells in a down market. But it doesn't sell as well when things are going great. And the Democrats have doubled down on this, most notably in reference to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Now, if you don't know who she is, she's an idiot, okay? She's up, she won the primary in New York, booted a long-term Democratic congressman who was far more moderate, and she's a socialist, okay? She's literally a commie pinko. And this gal is now getting a lot of love from the elders of the Democratic Party. Here is Valerie Jarrett. This is none other than the same Valerie Jarrett who lived with the Obamas in some sort of, you know, three's a crowd arrangement. I will tell you that unlike Roseanne Barr, I know Valerie Jarrett is black. And here is what she says on The View in an exchange with McCain. The first person talking is Meghan McCain on The View. And McCain is pressing her if she thinks Ocasio-Cortez is the future of the Democratic Party. Listen closely.
Do you think future Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez is the future?
I think our future is the diversity of our country. And that's why I'm encouraging everybody to vote. One face to the Democratic Party.
But there is a fracture. I mean, Nancy Pelosi won't support her. And we saw the fracture, which Whoopi is referring to, with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton in the last election. It could repeat itself and you could get Trump again. At a certain point, the Democrats are going to have to choose if they're Democrats or socialist Democrats. Which one would you prefer?
We have a big tent. And I think there are room for a lot of voices in our party. And that's part of how President Obama was elected, because he built that big tent.
Wrong. Socialism, I am sorry, does not sell in America, at least not yet. Obama didn't get elected because he was a socialist and he appealed to socialists, okay? He may have been a socialist. He may have appealed to socialists. But he appealed to the broader tent, right? He was the one who, he didn't, what's, tell me one thing that Obama said that was specific during the his first election, okay, back in 2008. I mean, that was the whole point of it. He didn't ever say anything specific. He talked in platitudes and hopes and dreams and unification. And people like that kind of stuff. People like unification talk. People like feeling good. Okay? But Ocasio-Cortez is on a tear. She's out there talking about how Israel's an occupier. She gets challenged on it. Then she goes, "Oh, I'm not an expert in anything geopolitical." I mean, every interview she does ends in somewhat of a mild catastrophe. And yet she continues to be mainstreamed by the Democratic Party. They are all terrified of her because they are a party beholden to the nutjob freaks on the left. And they are catering to them. And the most alarming thing to me is that they're catering to them not just in the primaries where you have to, I guess, tack right or left, depending on who you are, and then mainstream yourself in them. In the generals, but they have these socialists winning the primaries, so they are catering to them now in the general election. In an election where there are Republicans, Democrats, and independents, I don't know very many socialist independents. I understand it's a mythical group, these independents, and I, you know, they're, it's a mixed bag. But in the independents, very few of them want to see the type of radical financial changes that Ocasio-Cortez speaks of. Here's Margaret Brennan on Sunday, CBS Face the Nation, talking to none other than Miss Ocasio-Cortez about the future of the Democratic Party, specifically to the leadership of one Nancy Mini-Strokes Pelosi. Listen to this.
Right now, there is a female leader within the Democratic Party, Nancy Pelosi. If you were lucky enough to win in November and come here to Washington, will you support her?
You know, I need to get to Congress first. But
you don't
I'm
her as the party leader.
I mean, she's the current party leader, absolutely. And I look forward to be part of that conversation and winning back the House. There is no decision about the party leader until we win the House first.
So you are leaving open the possibility you may endorse her if you win in November?
Yeah.
She lies. The first thing she's going to do is put a shiv in Nancy as soon as she gets there. Wait, don't you? Of course. This is the tension right now in the Democratic Party. A lot of news is out there about how Trump is at odds with the Republicans. It is nothing compared to the earthquake going on inside the Democratic Party. And it's not a good earthquake. It's not the kind of earthquake that shakes up good change. It's bringing in a bunch of nut jobs, leftists, crazy people. This is important to you because we don't want these people in charge of the country, okay? Do we? Do we want to go? 4.1 GDP growth is a result of a business guy in charge. You want to have a 20-something loser who, you know, went to college and that's her greatest accomplishment to be in charge of economic policy in this country? Do you? I don't. I don't think it's good. And that's why this is important. Because this, and I think my feelings on this, my sense of it, maybe I'm articulating it better than some people, but I know that a lot of people think the way that we do. A lot of people instinctively hear her and go, and it colors their sense of other Democrats. They go, this party, okay, they're getting a little weird on me. They're going a little too far left. You know, I kind of don't want the government to confiscate my house and give it to the homeless. Well, they're doing that in Sweden and argue, oh, it's not constitutional. Well, well, let's get Kavanaugh put in, please, because by the way, it's a takings and the Constitution allows for it. You know, if it's for public good. Cases like Kelo have stretched that far and wide. I don't want to get too far from this, but don't think it's not possible, and I don't want to sound like a nut job, but it's, you know, these people, if left to their own devices, would change the nature of what America is as a country. Obama already tried. 8 years he tried to do that. And in many ways, he was successful. In many ways, Obamacare is not who we are as a country. It isn't. We are a country of individuals who are strong, who are self-sufficient, who take care of themselves. And when there are people in our community in need, we take care of those. We are not a country that pays for about half the population or more to have a benefit that they did not earn. And that is the difference. That is the fundamental mentality difference between a socialist Democrat and a Trump Republican. And if you have to ask me where the country is, you know, if I lick my finger here and put it up in the air and I tell you, where do you think the country is? They're leaning more Trump Republican than they are socialist Democrat. I'll tell you that right now. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski back after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Sam Murkowski. Yes, it's not just the economy that's improving. It's not just lower unemployment, GDP going up. All indicators show that engines are firing on all cylinders. But it's also success that Trump is having overseas with his foreign policy. Every time Trump has a success with foreign policy, it does two things. Obviously, it bolsters his standing with voters, okay? But it also it directly refutes this idea, this concept that Trump is a buffoon and is inadequate on the world stage. And that, by the way, discredits the media who are peddling this narrative. Very powerful. So supporting this, I saw an article in the Daily Mail yesterday. Kim keeps his word. Remains of 55 U.S. servicemen killed during the Korean War are repatriated, as per North Korea leader's promise to Trump. So Kim Jong-un, finally, they had an opportunity to do this for the last 65 years, 65th anniversary, the end of the Korean War. 65 years they've had to send remaining servicemen back for a proper burial, and they do it now. And they do it now because it's a demand that Trump made. Now, another demand that we made was for them to dismantle their weapons factories, and some images released to the media the other day seem to show that that is happening. A factory that was being developed and developed over the last decade or so is now being dismantled. And yes, I understand it. Trust me, I trust communists not one bit. I don't think Kim Jong-un is a trustworthy partner. But what these type of acts show me is that the North Koreans, for the first time, want to at least show good faith to the United States. Whether their dismantling is a fiction or not, they want it to appear, at least, as though they are dismantling, as though they are complying with Trump's demands. And that tells me that they are, for the first time, terrified of us. And I know that we, as a country, are more likely to get our or reach our stated objective, which here is a denuclearized North Korea and perhaps eventual unification of the Koreas and the elimination of a terror sponsor, right? The idea that North Koreans are going to be making nukes and selling them on the black market, very possible, okay, very frightening. The stated objective of not having that happen, preventing that from occurring, is attainable. And it's attainable because they fear us. And they ought to. But they didn't before because you and I spent a ton of money on taxes that went to building up this monumental military. But we had nincompoop leaders in the White House who didn't know how to leverage that in a negotiation. You had Obama the eunuch and his crew going over to North Korea saying, oh, pretty please, pretty please. It's a joke. Yeah, who was his top advisor? Valerie Jarrett. Who thinks Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is the future of the Democratic Party. We're a big tent, yo. We're a big tent. We got room for all the crazies. Bring them in. Socialists, liberals, communists. We want them all. It's got to be a big tent. My question is, how many different bathrooms do they have in that big tent? Because they're accommodating a crap ton of genders out there. Oh, I know. I'm going to San Francisco today. yes, I'll report back next week. Of course I will. Oh, I'm going to have some great stories. I just know it. All right. Don't go anywhere. We got our funny segment up next. Yes, yes, yes. Robbie's already asking for a poop report. Come back from San Francisco. Will do. Will do. Don't go anywhere. Friday funny segment up next.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Well, speaking of Valerie Jarrett, for reasons that I'm going to tell you in 1 second, I would not send Roseanne Barr to the Cairo International Garden Municipal Park Zoo. Well, she might get stumped. Okay, I'll explain in a minute. This zoo apparently is a touch cash strapped. And as part of this little problem, this Egyptian zoo apparently is coloring donkeys to look like zebras. Yeah. According to CBS News, zoo is accused of painting donkeys to look like zebras. They've become a target of ridicule after an Egyptian student, Mahmoud Saran, posted images on Facebook of the suspicious beast. Now, this does certainly have faint resemblances to the controversy where Roseanne Barr suspected that Valerie Jarrett was something that she wasn't. And we're not going to talk about any animals because I don't want to go there. But it also kind of reminds me of Rachel Dolezal, who was the Czech lady who wanted to be black. Everybody wants to be something that they aren't. Even these donkeys, assuming that it wasn't the zoo that did this to them. Can I also say this? The little I know about zoology, and it's not a lot, folks, I'll be honest with you. I am a member of the San Diego Zoo and Wild Animal Park, so I do go down there from time to time with the kids. But the little I know about animals in the wild, where do zebras come from? Africa? Okay, where's Egypt? Well, it's in northern Africa. It's on the same continent. This poor zoo can't even do an intercontinental delivery. They could literally take a truck, drive it, I don't know how, 3 days, and pick up a zebra somewhere. Well, yeah, I think this is hilarious. Okay, so can you imagine going... They got a horse, they give him a prosthetic hump, tell you it's a camel. I'm looking at the picture. We're going to have to put this up. Will you put this, Robbie? You got to put this up on Instagram and on Facebook. This is definitely a donkey. But the stripes are something. So, all right. Yes, it's fraud. By the way, you probably could get your ticket refunded in the States. I mean, you go in under false pretenses that you're going to see exotic animals, and this is what you get. I love that they had to the CBS News went to outside experts to verify that this animal in the picture is really a donkey. This confirms a long time thing that CBS News wouldn't know an ass if they saw one. Also, I think that they put more research into this news story than they do on an average story about Donald Trump. So anyway, there we have it. Friday Funny. Sam Rogowski back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski. Now, as for Trump-Russia collusion, all right, the idea that Putin has Trump in his pocket and is manipulating him like a little poupée, I want to just share with you this clip. This is took place on Wednesday at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, is testifying. Now, Pompeo is the Secretary of State. He's also, in my view, right now, currently in the Trump administration, the number one top Trump confidant. I think he's Trump's right-hand guy. Trump has a lot of confidence in him. The two meet very regularly. And he was an early Trump acolyte, okay, or a supporter. So this guy's a Trumpist, okay? He's not He's not a member of the Republican resistance movement. This is Pompeo talking about the Crimean Peninsula. This is a very important, strategically valuable part of the Ukraine that under Obama, right, the guy who was, you know, strong with against Putin and said to Putin, Vladimir, you cut this out. You cut it out. So during the Obama administration, Putin went down there and took it over, took over the Crimean Peninsula. And Obama did nothing. Here is the language used by Mike Pompeo describing the Crimean circumstances and our allegiance to our allies in defense of the Ukraine and in direct opposition to Russia and to Putin.
Today, the Trump administration is releasing what we're calling the Crimea Declaration. One part reads as follows, quote, the United States calls on Russia to respect the principles to which it has long claimed to adhere and to end its occupation of Crimea, end of quote. I want to assure this committee that the United States does not and will not recognize the Kremlin's purported annexation of Crimea. We stand together with allies, partners, and the international community in our commitment to Ukraine and its territorial integrity. There will be no relief of Crimea-related sanctions until Russia returns control of the Crimean Peninsula to Ukraine.
Now, I understand we got a politician speaking, so it's not, you know, we can't always guarantee truth. But one thing about Trump when he deals with the, you know, the bold declarations regarding foreign policy. From the get-go, Trump does not like red lines. Now, there's not really a big, like, glaring red line. If something happens, then there will be action. But this is really specific, and Trump does not, as a human being, like to lose on something when he puts out a specific demand or a specific issue. He doesn't like it. This is real. In other words, all the stuff that you're hearing about how Trump is in Putin's back pocket and da-da-da, Trump is taking a stand on this issue in a way that Obama never did. Obama's lack of leadership and literally almost caused the end, the political end, or certainly a tremendous political crisis in the Ukraine. It's a part of the world that's very familiar to me. My family is from Eastern Europe. Now, as Pompeo is saying this, we have Brian Stelter on CNN's Reliable Sources saying this nonsense. Listen to this.
When historians look back on the Trump presidency, they'll say that this was the week that something changed, something really shifted in the conversations about the president. Uncomfortable questions moved into the mainstream in a big way. Trump's odd behavior with Vladimir Putin is compelling so many people to ask, what does Putin have on Trump? Has Trump been compromised? All of those people, those experts, those reporters, they are looking at the fact pattern and they're seeing something strange, even sinister.
Even sinister. These people have lost their freaking minds. And I can't take these journalists seriously one bit, because when Obama whispered into a hot mic to Dmitry Medvedev, who was the acting Putin stooge, the interim president of Russia, just to give Vladimir, you know, term limits, they can't have consecutive terms. So Medvedev comes in as the Putin loyalist who holds the presidential seat for Vladimir to return in the next election, says to him, hey, Dmitry. You know, I can't do anything right now. I got an election coming up. After the midterms, I can help you out. I'd be more flexible. Where were all these media types talk about collusion, talk about sinister, collusive activities? I mean, it's a joke. You've got to understand this. This isn't real. This is fantasy. Now, I will end with this. There, April Ryan on this topic of Putin. All right. this guy. This is the kind of quality journalism that they have on CNN. This is with Don Lemon on Wednesday. And this is what April Ryan is saying. This is her analysis. And she cites, by the way, a very good authoritative source, a noted philosopher of our time. Listen to this.
The president sees that his numbers are waning. He cannot be He cannot be this dictator that he's trying to be at this moment. It reminds me of a song. Jay-Z, prolific rapper, prolific philosopher. I'm taking a quote from him. You know, Putin has got Donald Trump big pimping. Big pimping Donald Trump right now. Yeah. Donald Trump, and we don't like to say it, but we are going down a line of a dictatorship. Russia and China, that's what we are.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a song. Jay-Z, prolific rapper, prolific philosopher. I'm taking a quote from him. Putin has got Donald Trump big pimping Donald Trump right now. I rest my case. If this is the zeitgeist, if this is in any way, shape, or form representative of what the Democratic Party is, then I don't think these midterms are going to turn out the way Larry Sabato thinks. And that's what I'm going to say here. Don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Marjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
There is a running joke at my house that the only thing I really love more than my kids are the cars parked in my garage. As with any good joke, there's a ring of truth to it. Sam Marjowski here. The automotive world has lost a great man. I wanted to take a minute and talk about Sergio Marchionne, who passed away this week after complications from surgery in Zurich, Switzerland. Now, Sergio Marchionne, you may not know who he is. He was the CEO of Fiat, the CEO of Ferrari, and the CEO of Chrysler. He was the guy responsible for saving Chrysler. He was somebody I admire deeply because of his balls out in your face style. He took companies that were big and broken and failing. When he came to Fiat, right now we all know those cute little Fiat 500s and people scooting around in them. But, you know, Fiat wasn't even on the American market a few years back. When he went into Fiat, there's a story about him basically firing a manager a day, every day. It was like an execution. They'd fire a manager. And he got a lot of bad press for it at the time because it was ruthless and it was inhumane. And how can you do this? How can you break so many lives? But the fact of the matter is, he demanded results. He was somebody who, although he was born in Italy, he had a lot of American in him. He had some experience working at Deloitte and Touche, I think started his career there. So he was a numbers guy, accountant, and worked his way up through a number of companies. And what he touched usually turned into gold. These are the type of people that I admire greatly. And it requires boldness. Ferrari, by the way, I know it's a storied brand and I'm a great fan of it, as many of you know. But it was not a company before Marchionne came in. It was not a company that was working. I mean, they had their profitability went through the roof under this guy. And it's really amazing when somebody can take a brand that is as storied as Ferrari and then take a brand that like Chrysler that was actually literally in the toilet and do amazing things with both of them. As with many great people, they leave us prematurely. And Sergio was 66 years old. He's being replaced by Louis Camilleri. Well, some of you are wondering about this because, all right, you've got a great living legend, big shoes to fill. What do you do now? Now, Camilleri is a guy. He's a former chairman and CEO of Philip Morris International. So you got a guy who's in the cigarette business, who's now will be the head of Ferrari. Now, if you love Ferrari, you love Formula One, maybe you have a Ferrari, maybe you dream of having a Ferrari someday, this maybe matters to you because you go, well, this is a big brand. It's going to a guy who makes cigarettes. I mean, it's totally different. But wait a minute. Have I got a plot twist for you? Got to remember that Philip Morris, one of the big sponsors of Ferrari Racing, This is a guy that has been that has gone to all the races. He's a car guy. He's one of the top Ferrari collectors too. So it's in his blood. It's in his, and you have to have that passion when you're in business. It can't just be about firing people. You also have to lift people up, and you have to believe in what it is that you're doing. And it doesn't matter if it's cars or cigarettes or the law or, I don't know, a lemonade stand like my kids want to open up next week, and I'm going to have to help with that. Okay. Love you all. You know the drill. I'm headed out this weekend to San Francisco. I look forward to telling you all about that. You know, Instagram, at Sam Nation. Twitter, at Sam Nation. Facebook, Sam Nation. You see a pattern? Anybody? And tell your friends about the podcast. It's on iTunes. iTunes. And that is not in the voice of noted philosopher Jay-Z. See you guys next week. Soldiers, keep on.